Welcome to the Art of Mathematics. I'm Carol Jacoby, and joining us once again is Joseph Benesch, Professor Emeritus of California State University, Long Beach. Welcome to the show, Joseph.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here again.
I wanted to continue our conversation last time. We talked about Fourier analysis and its importance for the heat equation and the age of the Earth and various things. And I wanted to get a little bit more into the mathematics behind it. First of all, why is it so essential? Why is it so important? And then get into some of the mathematics. So what's the big deal?
Yeah, thanks, Carol, for that question. The Fourier applied a technique, a mathematical technique, to solving the heat equation. But that might give a wrong impression, might give the impression that this is a method very particular to the heat equation. It might give the impression that it's something very particular to differential equations. But in fact, Fourier's method, which is called Fourier analysis, is fundamental. One might say that it would have been discovered by us humans one way or another. Didn't have to be discovered the way Fourier did. And just to give you an idea of just how fundamental the Fourier transform, and more generally Fourier analysis, is, I'd like to quote something from an article called Fourier Transform, Nature's Way of Analyzing Data, in the magazine called Yale Scientific. And it starts with a quote by Ronald Coifman, described as nature's way of analyzing data. The Fourier transform is arguably the most powerful analytical tool in modern mathematics. Professor Peter Moore, a Yale structural biologist and professor of biophysics, agrees, quote, "To form an image on your retina, the lens in your eye performs Fourier transformations on the light that enters it," end quote. This tool is truly ubiquitous in nature. As our eyes and ears have subconsciously performed a Fourier transform to interpret sound and light waves for millions of years, hence it was only a matter of time until the human intellect caught up to our internal processing systems and was able to functionally describe this process. So this is Fourier analysis, yeah, which was hit upon by Fourier, was going to inevitably be discovered, as so eloquently expressed in this paragraph. But historically, it started with Fourier and his heat equation. Last time I mentioned how his heat equation was used by Lord Kelvin and by his assistant John Perry in the 19th century to estimate the age of the Earth. What Kelvin and what Perry did was conjecture what the early condition on the Earth was and how long the Earth had to be in existence for us to see the temperature gradient at the crust. Well, the temperature gradient at the crust, it gets quite hot as you go down. The temperature increases about 25 degrees centigrade for each kilometer as we descend into the Earth. So that gives an indication of how old the Earth is, should lead to an estimate, but it's hard to quantify. And what Fourier's method allowed Kelvin and Perry to do is to arrive at an estimate based on their conjecture of the early conditions on the Earth. And Perry was a little more sophisticated, a little more right on, one could say, in his understanding of the internal processes of the Earth, in particular that the mantle acts over a long time as a fluid, it flows. And using that and Fourier's method, he estimated that the Earth is about 2 to 3 billion years old, which is extremely close to today's estimate of the age of the Earth, which is between 4 and 5 billion years old. But what's the mathematics behind it? The mathematics behind it is the Fourier transform, as mentioned in this paragraph. The Fourier transform allows one to predict what the future temperature will be, given the initial conditions today. That allowed Perry to give his remarkably good estimate of the age of the Earth. Good. So it doesn't really tell you what the Fourier transform is. And to get a better idea of what the Fourier transform is, let's look at a relative, which is a Fourier series, and look at another physical phenomenon, not heat or temperature, but a vibrating string. Vibrating string was actually analyzed before Fourier, about half a century before Fourier, in the middle of the 18th century, there was a partial differential equation, which is today called the wave equation, describing the vibration of a string. It was solved and analyzed using methods very close to Fourier. And what was discovered is that the sound produced by the vibrating string is periodic. It's a periodic pressure wave. And that periodic pressure wave could be described in terms of simpler waves. That is, in terms of a vibrating waveform, which is a sinusoid, that is a cosine or a sine. And that would give, if one looks at simply a single frequency, that is a single cosine or a sine, a single sinusoid, this would give a pure tone. That's more or less what's produced by a tuning fork. However, in the mathematical analysis, what they saw is that one vibrating string, which is has an extension, gives a more complicated waveform, produces higher frequencies. Each higher frequency is a multiple of the fundamental frequency and appeals to our ears. This is why the sound of a vibrating string, at least played by a good violinist, is so appealing. What they hit upon is what later became known as a Fourier series. The periodic vibratory motion could be expressed as in terms of simpler, pure vibrations. And together, they, when combined, they form the actual sound produced by a vibrating string. That is what Fourier called a Fourier series. Actually, what Fourier's great idea is that any waveform, or in fact, any periodic function, if we want to talk mathematically, any periodic function can be expressed in this type of series of a superpositions of sines and cosines. Each periodic with the same period, but one allows higher and higher frequencies. Fourier made a daring assertion, and that daring assertion was exactly that, that any function, periodic, can be expressed as this type of series of sines and cosines. That is, one could say, a superposition of sines and cosines. The Fourier transform is a close relative of the Fourier series. With this approach, he was then able to look at various situations, what mathematicians call boundary value problems, or initial boundary value problems for the heat equation, and solve them using the Fourier transform or Fourier series. The basic idea, then, simply put, is that one takes a complicated function and breaks it into simpler functions. This direction is called analysis, Fourier analysis of a function. He then was able to, for these simpler components, solve the heat equation and then synthesize this into a solution for the given complicated function. There, in a nutshell, is the idea of Fourier. Take a complicated function, perhaps periodic, perhaps not periodic, and break it into simpler components. Use these simpler components to solve the problem at hand, and then synthesize. So there's an initial step of analysis into simpler components, and then at some point synthesizing these simpler solutions into the solution of the problem.
So you can do this for any function or just periodic functions?
Well, Fourier went a step further. He was a genius. He started with periodic functions. There one has Fourier series, but one would like to extend that to any function, even not periodic. And there he introduced the Fourier transform. So the Fourier transform is used, thank you for that question, Carol, is used for more general functions, not periodic. So he was able to deal with both situations, periodic and non-periodic.
This is interesting. It kind of reminds me of the prime numbers. It says that all the functions are really at their heart sines and cosines. And you can take one of them and you can build it up from sines and cosines.
That's very curious you should say that. Prime numbers are very much the building blocks of integers. And I very much like that analogy. One could take that remark, and that was, I think, a very prescient remark, because in fact, although Koifman says that this is nature's way of understanding data, our eyes and our ears, how we perceive the world using Fourier analysis, applying the Fourier transform. One could go beyond what nature does and apply Fourier analysis, generalizations of Fourier analysis, to understanding prime numbers. For instance, one might ask, well, how are the prime numbers distributed? This result is known as the prime number theorem. And in fact, there's a very nice talk by Terence Tao, a video, where, and this is, idea is not original with him, but what he says is what one does is take the numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. One puts a signal on these numbers where the signal is vanishes for non-prime numbers. So in a sense, one is picking out the prime numbers by putting on a signal. After you put the signal on, one applies a transform, very much related to the Fourier transform. And the analogy here is with hearing. Just as one hears a pressure wave, by decomposing that pressure wave into its sines and cosines, in a similar way, one hears the prime numbers by first creating a, if you will, a sound on them, and then listening, that is transforming the sound wave of the prime numbers. One obtains an interesting function that way, which is called the Riemann zeta function. And it's been a certain values associated with the zeta function, what are called the zeros of the Riemann zeta function, could be thought of as the natural tones of the prime numbers. And these tones then have been described as the music of the primes.
The music of the primes, I love it. So our ears are doing the Fourier transform.
Our ears are doing a Fourier transform, our eyes are doing a Fourier transform of the incoming signals. And well, one can go beyond nature. Our eyes use electromagnetic waves, but not all of them, just in a limited band, the visible band of light, which is fine for me to see you, but it's not fine for me to see your molecules. I cannot see your molecules. And the reason I can't see them is because the wavelength of visible light is far longer than the size of a molecule, the extent of a molecule or an atom. What does that suggest? That suggests that if one uses electromagnetic waves, light is an electromagnetic wave, if one uses electromagnetic wave with very short wavelengths on the order of the width of an atom, one can see atoms, one can see molecules, one can see the structure of molecules. And that's been done. These rays are known as X-rays. The wavelength of an X-ray is on the order of the width of an atom. But we don't have our eyes to process X-rays. So one has to use mathematics. And the mathematics it's used is the Fourier transform. One shines, if you will, X-rays on a crystal. That crystal will scatter the X-ray in all directions. Then one analyzes the scattered X-rays. And from that, one can, and this is not easy, but one can analyze the molecular structure of a crystal. This was originally done by Bragg, Lawrence Bragg, soon after Max von Laue in Germany hit upon the idea of exposing crystals to X-rays and photographing the result. One obtained X-ray diffraction patterns. But how in the world do you go from X-ray diffraction patterns, which look like, how should I say, interesting abstract geometric shapes, to the actual structure of the substance of them, the molecular structure? At first, it was done by Lawrence Bragg using a lot of guesswork. For instance, salt, sodium chloride, one can guess that at the molecular level, it has a cubic structure because when we look at a salt crystal, it's cubic. So he was able to guess and do some math guesswork to arrive at the molecular structure of salt. But when you get into more complicated things, he quickly saw that it was impossible to simply take his unsophisticated approach. One needed a more sophisticated approach. And this more sophisticated approach was applying Fourier analysis. And one can say that, in fact, what the crystal is doing to the X-ray, incoming X-ray, is applying a Fourier transform. That is, what one of the X-ray diffraction photograph is a Fourier transform of the electron density function of the substance. What one then has to do is take the result of the scattered waves and apply an inverse Fourier transform to get at the structure. And this has been done for now over a century. And thanks to more and more sophisticated technology, in particular, very powerful computers, one can use X-ray crystallography, that's the term, to discover the structure of extremely complicated molecules, molecules that consist of thousands, tens of thousands, even hundreds of thousands of atoms, impossible to do if we didn't have the Fourier transform. Also very powerful technology.
Well, this is very interesting. So many applications in our bodies, in substances, and in pure mathematics, looking at the primes. Very
I'll
interesting.
Throw in one more thing.
Okay.
Because not every, it's, X-ray crystallography is not an everyday thing. But something that is everyday that we all have experience with is JPEG files. And JPEG files are files that have been compressed so that the amount of data has been reduced. And it's been compressed by basically cutting off the higher frequencies. That is also Fourier analysis.
Very interesting. That's great. Yeah, I love the way it all comes down to the sines and cosines and all these powerful techniques of looking at mathematical functions through getting it down to sines and cosines, getting it
And I can't resist one more remark.
Okay.
Which is that mathematicians, being mathematicians, push things further. So they push things beyond sines and cosines and look at generalizations to other types of decompositions, which are used, for instance, in number theory and in other places as well. There's something called a wavelet, which is very much something akin to a Fourier series.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Joseph. I really enjoyed talking to you.
My pleasure.
And this is I'm not an applied mathematician, so a lot of this is new to me. This is very exciting. So thanks again for joining us.
Of course. My pleasure.
We'd love to hear from you. If you have something you'd like to share on the air or a suggestion for a guest for a future show, leave a message at anchor.fm/theartofmathematics with hyphens, or email me at cjacoby@jacobiconsulting.com. And if you'd like to learn how to get answers from data, check out my class at excelfordecisionmakers.com. See you next month. Thanks for listening.